Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Any thoughts, Eamon, about germs lurking in tea towels and phones? Yeah.
Seeing as I had a young lad into yesterday who had a bad dose of gastro. There's the answer.
There's your answer, yeah. It's everywhere, isn't it?
It is, and it's a year-own problem. It tends to be a bigger problem during the summer. Things fester in the heat and...
barbecues.
Yes, and indoors and outdoors is warmer, more humid, and the bacteria just absolutely love it.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, this is it, yeah. So I think anything that makes us more hygienic is harm.
I think there's a balance to be struck there. Obviously, you don't have to throw the tea towels in the washing machine every single day, but at the same time, you know, where's the balance? I think people have to decide that for themselves, but I'd err on the side of cleanliness.
Well, I just think that if you, let's say you wash up after the lunch and then you wash up after the dinner, chances are the tea towel is wet and manky anyway.
Yeah.
I'd be inclined to change them. Anyway, we're not here to talk about tea towels.
No.
We've far more interesting things to talk about. We're always looking for topics to get Eamon, just to say to the listeners, to get Eamon to expand on.
Yeah.
Every so often. And I have noticed, and this is going on for quite a while now, week after week, people are getting in touch, Eamon, and saying, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
It seems to be, there seems to be an epidemic of insomnia out there.
Yeah. It's a complex subject. Part of the difficulty, it's extremely common, but not everybody is, not everybody who has a bad night's sleep necessarily is suffering from insomnia. There's this thing that, oh, we need to have absolutely 8 hours every night. And as I'll discuss now over the next few minutes, that's not necessarily a myth, but at the same time, everybody is hugely, hugely different. Striking that happy medium is often the problem. And one of the biggest catch-22s of this is, of course, the more you stress about not sleeping, the less you're going to sleep.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah. Can I just ask you, because I want to get down to the nitty gritty, because I suspect that when people text us in, Eamon, they're really hoping that you'll give them your blessing to take a sleeping tablet.
Yeah.
And I've worked with you a long time and I know you are very against sleeping tablets.
Yeah, the issue with the sleeping tablets is that they will work in the short term, all right? But the short term is over a couple of days or maybe a week or two at most. And it's important to be aware that they fall under the category of drugs called hypnotics and sedatives. And hypnotics are drugs that are allegedly supposed to induce sleep, but they're really sedatives. And that's the problem. They sedate the person. So is that what you're getting is a sedated person rather than an actual sleeping person. The bigger problem with them is that they lose their effectiveness over a short period of time. They certainly can lead to dependency. They certainly can have a hangover effect. And there's no doubt but that as people get older, there is a significant impact that sleeping tablets have on coordination and mobility, so that for regular sleeping tablet users and the older people, you're seeing much higher rates of falls, fractured hips and things like that. So if there is a short-term problem, there is an immediate short-term issue that's obviously causing the person great stress, it's appropriate and okay to use it for a short period of time. Or a short period of time is a week or two. Beyond that, it's going to lose its effectiveness. It will become dependence farming and it's not going to work anyway.
I'm just thinking of for instance here, Eamon, hypothetical situation, a woman's husband dies suddenly she has to get through the funeral.
Yeah, I understand. And I suppose one of the ones that sticks in my conscience is exactly the scenario from about 20 years ago, where a patient well known to me whose much beloved husband died, and the family said, oh, we have to give her something to try and get her through. And I said, okay, but we need to keep the use short. And when she died 15 years later, she was still taking it.
Yeah.
In other words, the couple of days became a couple of weeks, became a couple of months, became the rest of her life. And that's what my fear is because it's a very slippery slope. If there's, I can understand, and people say you'd be very mean not to do it, but if I was to use it at all, it would be with very, very strict limits. I suppose part of the problem is that, just digressing for 1 minute, grief, loss, grieving is one of the hardest things that people have to go through. It's a horrible thing. the difficulty with sedation of any form is that, if you like, it prolongs or delays our processing of the grief.
Yeah.
And the person can't work through the issues, can't work through their grief, which is, as I've said to people many times before, when the person dies, the person that has died is there in front of you all the time. But over time, they stand beside you and they walk with you going forward. In other words, the idea being that the person has to be helped to process their grief. And that takes time. There's absolutely no question about it.
Sleeping tablets isn't the
solution. It's going to delay it.
And Eamon, back in the day, and I know obviously you would be loath to criticise your medical colleagues,
yeah,
but I certainly have the impression that back in the day, GPs were giving them out. Oh, I won't say willy-nilly, but they were fairly...
The old expression, like snuff at a wake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the difficulty is that part of the problem here is that, and one of the reasons that we're seeing an increase in people finding difficulty to sleep is because the increasing stressful lifestyle we're living. Anybody who's doom scrolling at 12 o'clock at night and thinking that the world is going to hell in a basket case and watch what's happening around the world, and of course they're going to be up to 19 and going to be worried and they're not going to be able to sleep. The point I'm making is that one of the big problems is that for a lot of the issues to do with our mind and our mental health and so on, there isn't a tablet that's going to fix it. There aren't the tablets that are going to fix it, but that doesn't stop people prescribing. I suppose there's a kind of we better do something. We have to do something. And so, for example, while the use of a class of drugs called the benzodiazepines has fallen significantly because of their well-known addictive side effects, the problem is that we're seeing a huge rise in the rate in the use of antidepressant medications, such as the class of medications called the SSRIs.
Which is a conversation for another day.
Yeah.
So, Eamon, let's say a patient comes into you someday in Farran 4 and says, Eamon, I can't sleep. It's gone on for weeks. I'm going out of my mind with the tiredness during the day. What do you go through with them then?
I think one of the simple things I'd start with is, what time are you going to bed? How many hours or how well do you think you sleep during the night, and what time are you getting up in the morning? Now, there's a couple of reasons for asking that. One of the issues is that if somebody has the so-called early insomnia, you're going to be looking at stressors, things that are stressing them for some reason or another. I would encourage people to try to get a bit around the same time every night. It doesn't have to be the minute or even the half hour, but around the same time every night. Setting up the environment, trying not to have screens in the bedroom, avoiding using alcohol going to sleep. People say, help me put to sleep. The difficulty is that there's two problems with that. A, that the effect of the alcohol wears off. It's a sedative. It wears off during the middle of the night and then you wake up. And secondly, it's a diuretic, so you're going to have to get up to go to the toilet anyway, so that kind of destroys the sleep. Second bit is, how are you sleeping during the night? The difficulty is that people's perception of how long they're asleep or how they're sleeping is actually notoriously poor. People say, I was awake at 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you'll say, well, actually, and then if you look at them, you'll see they're asleep at 5 past 2 and 5 past 3 and 5 past 4. If somebody's waking early in the morning, that may well point to a different problem. So if there's an underlying depressive disorder, one of the classic symptoms of a depression is that the person has so-called early morning awakening. They're worrying about the day that's ahead and they're catastrophizing about the day. So you start off with that. And the thing is that by doing that, what you try to tease out are what are the issues. I think the other thing too is to try to advise people, everybody is different and the amount of sleep we need varies or is different from person to person. And also the older we get, the less sleep we need. If you look at it this way, look at the babies. They're asleep for 16, 18 hours a day. As we get older, there's less and less sleep we actually need. I suppose the question we should ask ourselves is the degree to which you find your lack of sleep impacting on you the following day. So if you're falling asleep, sitting up, if you're falling asleep in the car or whatever, then that may well be a problem. If you're just feeling a bit tired in the morning when you wake up, but you actually function okay for the rest of the day, then you're probably getting enough sleep that night. I suppose one of the points I make is that if you do deliberately try to keep somebody awake, you'll get to maybe 30, 33, 36 hours and the person's going to go unconscious. So people will always get the sleep they need, but they may not get the sleep they want.
Talk to me about naps. Are you a fan of them?
Not a bad thing. The whole thing about poor naps has kind of gone in and out of fashion over the years. People say, if I sleep during the day, I'll never sleep at night. I don't necessarily agree with that. Again, it depends on context. It depends on circumstances. If you have the opportunity to have a few minutes rest during the day of 5 or 10 minutes, that can recharge the battery and keep it going for the rest of the day. It's a different kettle of fish if you go down for 2 hours during the day. It's obviously going to have an impact on you later on at night. Although if you do find yourself having to sleep for 2 hours during the day, I'd be asking the question, is there something else going on? So I don't necessarily see there being anything bad about taking a nap, but it has to be all about context.
I'm surprised that you said that we need less sleep as we get older, because I always had the perception that older people, that the older you get, the more you need to go to bed a bit earlier because you need more sleep.
People do that. No, it's the opposite actually. Biologically, we need less sleep as we go on. But what is the function of sleep? Sleep is restorative. Yes, it's about resting the body, but it's mostly about resting the brain. And there are things that happen. If you look at EEGs, if you wire people up and look at their brain activity during the night, you'll see there's an enormous amount of activity that goes on. And one of the things that seems to be happening is that there's a kind of scavenging and a cleaning that goes on in various brain circuits during the night time. And I'm not saying that as we get older, we need less need for that. But at the same time, it is a fact also that as we get older, that there isn't as much requirement for sleep. Now, the thing about it is that there's a difference between sleeping and resting. Older people may well want to rest more, and that's one of the things. And I mean, particularly as a person gets into the elderly category, they literally want to have the energy to keep going all day long. But that doesn't mean to say that they'll be sleeping all day long. That's where there may well be a problem, because the difficulty is if the person is resting in bed, looking at the four walls, so I'm going to drive them mad. Whereas if they're resting somewhere else, and if, for example, they're just reading a book or sleeping, this is just driving me mad, you're getting more and more anxious, and then the sleep gets further and further away from you. Whereas if you break the cycle, get out of bed, just reset the clock, so to speak, then go back into bed and get another couple of hours sleep.
I wonder too, does exercise have a role in it? Because I think people who walk and get fresh air every
day
probably
you're absolutely
sleep a
right.
bit better.
You're absolutely right. And there is no question, but there is a direct relationship and correlation between regular exercise and good sleep. I mean, it doesn't mean to say that you've got to go for a 10-mile run or you don't have to exhaust yourself physically. It's literally just get out and get the breath of fresh air. Even if it's a 10, 15, 20-minute walk, that certainly will be very beneficial. Keep it to maybe the earlier evening rather than last thing at night. It's not a good idea to go exercise late at night and then go to bed straight after it. But if you go for the bit of exercise, if you get out the bit of fresh air, there's absolutely no question, but there's a very good relationship in that. Quite apart from anything else, the very fact that you're exercising intends to burn off all those harmful emotional stuff, and it leaves you more relaxed.
Televisions in bedrooms, not a great idea.
No, screens generally, and that's televisions. Okay, there will be people who have televisions in their room, but everybody has a phone, and a lot of people have iPads or whatever, devices of various sorts. And as I said, the big problem is be aware, of course, that it's in the interest of the individual companies to encourage people to continue to scroll.
And we're all guilty.
It's a political topic, but I mean, I don't want to go too far on that. But at the same time, the reality is that there is an argument to be made. And I know certainly there have been some cases taken that the arguments are that the algorithms are deliberately addictive. You just keep going and going and going and going. One of the things that's worthwhile doing, I think, is that most of the more reputable apps will actually set limits and say, okay, fair enough, how long do you want to watch whatever for today? And it'll set a limit. And say, right, fair enough, you reached your 30 minutes limit, and that's it, you can't go any further, and that's great.
You've had enough. Just before we go to the break, I want to circle back for a minute, Eamon, to something you said earlier, because I find it very interesting. You said they can study people's brains while they're asleep.
Yeah.
What kind of
what they're doing is a thing called an EEG, an electroencephalogram. So basically what the process is that a technician would attach many electrodes or little alligator clips to your skull, or to your scalp, I should say, and then they can trace the electrical activity. Now, there are different kinds of electrical activity. I mean, these studies are also used for things for analysis of epilepsy and so on. But during the night time, we'll see that there are certain particular patterns of waveforms. Now, part of the difficulty is we, if truth be told, don't know exactly what these waveforms mean, but people are making educated guesses, and there are certain waveforms that you see. And the reckoning is that, like I said, is that it's kind of a scavenging exercise, that the brain is kind of clearing itself of toxic thoughts, and or not thoughts, but toxic chemicals and stuff. And that's the resetting that happens every night.
So and I know some of those watches, those fancy watches, they can tell you how much sleep, REM sleep you had, much deep sleep you had. Is there any merit in knowing that?
It's a useful metric. Is it something that you'd make a diagnosis on? Probably not. But at the same time, it's interesting because The interesting thing is that one of the restorative parts of the sleep is so-called REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep. And one of the curious things about that is that our eyes are moving rapidly. And if you put electrodes around the eyes, you can see the enormous electrical activity is going on. But the rest of the body is completely relaxed. And the person often looks as if they're almost dead. They're just completely like a sack of potatoes. So what the watches are picking up on is the lack of movement in the rest of the body. And they equate that then to REM sleep.
Okay, very good. Well, look, we've a load of questions for you. As I said, I think there's a lot of people dealing with sleep problems out there. 083 300 3300 if you have a question for Eamon. After the ad break, we'll put some questions to him.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, the questions about sleep, Eamon. Caller wants to ask you, this caller takes 5 milligrams of olanzapine.
Olanzapine,
yeah. For sleep, and wants to know, is there a better option?
Yeah, I imagine that that medication was either started by a consultant psychiatrist or maybe possibly by our GP. Strictly speaking, olanzapine is from a particular class of drugs called the antipsychotics. The difficulty is that where people's thoughts are racing, and some people's thoughts are really, really racing and become very intrusive, this can be used. It would be considered at the sort of the stronger end of the spectrum. One of the issues that I think is becoming apparent for men and especially for women is that if they're thinking is racing, there's some interesting research going on that shows that for people who are for the people who've got AD, people who've got ADHD and who are on autistic spectrum, this in itself can be a significant cause of issues. I suppose it goes back to the thing is it's not the what's happening, it's why it's happening and what's going on behind it. Olanzapine in and of itself is a very useful way of helping people to sleep, but it has a significant impact in terms of daytime. It's an impact on the following day. People get a hangover from it and it interferes with concentration and that kind of stuff.
Now, we have a male in his 70s who's been taking the antidepressant Fequel, F-E-Q-U-E-L.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but far away.
He's wondering, is it a form of sleeping tablet as well? Because he sleeps a lot after taking it and he's tired the following day
as well.
Yeah,
that's part of the issue. Quick answer is I'm not sure what the generic name for that is, but let me put you this way. The antidepressant medications are categorised as sedative and non-sedative. Now, the newer ones are allegedly less sedating than the older ones. There's a group of antidepressant medications called the tricyclic antidepressants, which are well known to cause sedation. And again, this is the point, they're sedating, they're not sleeping tablets. There can sometimes be a benefit in this, but the big difficulty, and it goes back to what I said earlier on, the difficulty is that as we get older, our ability to remove chemicals from our body, and I'm talking about particularly medications and things like that, they have to be removed by the kidneys and the liver. And the function of the kidneys and liver decline as we get older, and therefore doses that might have been appropriate when you were a younger person might become too much when you're an older person. And that's the reason why you then begin to see particularly the problem with the hangover the following day.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I googled it there while you were talking. There doesn't seem to be an antidepressant called Fequel, but there is one called Seroquel.
Seroquel, yeah.
It could be Seroquel he's talking about.
Okay, now interestingly, it's Seroquel. I'm just trying to think myself the generic name for that is, but Seroquel and the one we were talking about a minute ago, the olanzapine, are from the same drug class. They're not antidepressant medications. They're fairly powerful. What we call antipsychotic medications, so they're fairly powerful. They're fairly powerful sedative medications. They will switch somebody's brain off. They don't help you to sleep, but they will switch your brain off.
Okay, we'll move on from that one. A caller says a lot of blood pressure medication causes insomnia, and insomnia can lead to atrial fibrillation. This is an issue with the elderly mostly, but it can affect anyone.
Well, it's no more a comment than a question, yeah. Most of the more commonly used antihypertensive medications, while anything is possible, the rate of insomnia that you get with those is relatively few. One of the problems you can get is if you're taking diuretics, if you're taking tablets to help you pass fluids, urine out of your body, which might be necessary for underlying heart conditions. The problem with that is if you take those late in the day or even later in the day, then you'll be up at night passing urine and that's your sleep destroyed. So there's a question of timing. It's better to take those tablets first thing in the morning.
A caller says, can a lack of sleep lead to vision impairment or the need for glasses?
No. Quickly, it'd be saying that. The reason I'm saying that fairly definitively is that lack of sleep itself won't have that kind of an impact. Again, unfortunately, it's a sad fact of life that as we get older, our vision will decline. And that for most people of the age of 40 or 45, you're going to need glasses for reading at the very least.
And now Kathleen was in touch, and I'd say Kathleen's issue is typical of a lot of people. She says, if I go to bed at 11:30, I'm still awake at 2 and after it. It seems my mind goes into overdrive thinking about everything. My son got me tapes and a spray. It might be no good. Why doesn't my doctor give me a sleeping tablet?
Yeah, that's the problem.
I'm 75.
See, that's the difficulty, and that's something I hear very much again from older people is that, oh look, give me the sleeping tablet. I just have to have a sleep.
She says, by the way, her last line is, all my friends got them from their doctors.
Yeah, okay, they didn't actually, but you just think you did. So the answer to that is that goes back to all the things I've been talking about. That the reality is that unfortunately, the older we get, the less sleep we're going to actually need. Part of the problem there is how we occupy our time. Part of the difficulty is that you're going to bed at 11, you may well be awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's what you do between 11 and 2 o'clock in the morning. Preferably not looking at a screen, preferably listening to the radio, reading a book, doing something, anything to keep your mind occupied, and you'll probably find that you'll drift off. And the question you need to ask yourself is, how are you the following day? The thing is that if the person is able to function the following day, then the likelihood is I've had enough sleep during the night. Now people say, be on the phone straight away, oh, hang a second, oh, I'm exhausted the following day if I don't get my night's sleep. Yes, I understand that, but I think we need to reframe all of this and look at it in a slightly healthier and more holistic way and say, for example, what are the issues? Where are the stresses? Where are the pressures that are there? Now, there could be underlying medical problems, and there's a whole list of medical issues that can cause people to have difficulty with sleep, including the topic we were talking about a few weeks ago about sleep apnea. And it may very well be that by treating the underlying medical conditions, you actually help the person to sleep. So that's what you need to do. You need to tease out, why is it that the person is not able to sleep?
Well, funny you should mention that, because we've a question about sleep apnea from a male in his mid-60s. He says, is there anything better than a CPAP machine?
CPAP machine, yeah.
He says he sometimes takes off the machine during the night without realising it.
Yeah, and the difficulty is because of the pure mechanics of the issue with sleep apnea, if there isn't other changes, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute, if there aren't other changes, then unfortunately what is known to be the most effective way, but it's also not entirely useful. Well, it is very useful, but it's just the whole mechanics of using the CPAP mask and the noise from the machine and all the rest of it. One of the things is that there is an association between sleep apnea and extra weight. And if a means can be found to help the person to lose extra weight, that may help reduce their sleep apnea problem and therefore reduce their need for the CPAP machine in the first place.
A listener says, is it all right if you can ask Dr. Oh yeah, is it all right to ask Dr. Eamon? I'm a male in my 40s and I snore like mad. I've no problem sleeping. What in the name of God is causing my snoring?
Yeah, the large issue there is that it's what's going on in the back of your throat. It's just literally the way you're put together, your anatomy. The snoring noise actually comes from the glottis from way back at the back of the throat. And what's happening is that as the air is moving in and out, this bit of tissue is flapping backwards and forwards, and that's what's causing the noising that's going on. One of the things is that if you have somebody who is in the vicinity of your vicinity during the night time when you're sleeping, just to see, the thing we're watching out for is beyond the loud snoring, are you also having episodes where you stop breathing, where we have so-called apneic episodes? That's what the sleep apnea is about. Because if it is the case, you may well have a sleep apnea.
Listener says by WhatsApp, says I've been on amitriptyline,
yeah,
for over 20 years for sleep, and I often wonder if they're still safe to take. I don't take them every night, but about four nights a week.
Again, depends on the dose. The amitriptyline is the archetypical, what they call, tricyclic antidepressant medication, and decades ago, probably before I started practicing, amitriptyline would have been one of the few antidepressant medications available. It fell out of favour because in the kind of doses people are using to treat depression, it is cardiotoxic. It can have an effect on the heart. Now, to be fair, the doses, put this in context, there would have been doses of 150, 175, 200 milligrams of amitriptyline being used as a treatment for depression, and that those kind of doses, people would be just unconscious with the fatigue from the medication, plus the fact that it's cardiotoxic if taken in overdose. Today, 10 milligram, 25 milligram of the tablet is used. Again, it's not a sleeping tablet. It will sedate a person, and in that way, they are probably resting more. But it's not necessarily a natural sleep. To be fair, relatively small dose of amitriptyline can be useful for sleep. I have to point out, though, that amitriptyline is now much, much more widely used, in case people are getting concerned and saying they're saying on amitriptyline, but it's also used as a treatment for chronic pain syndromes. So it's very widely used for that.
I'm just going to give you one more, Eamon. There's loads after coming in the last few minutes, but we can't get around to all of them. But this person says, if a person has a low heart rate, is it dangerous for them to take a sleeping tablet?
It's not, okay, like everything else, it depends. It depends how slow is the heart rate. It depends, is there an underlying cardiac condition that might be causing the slow heart rate? It depends on which kind of sleeping tablet you're talking about. In the ideal world, what you try to do is you try to avoid using a sleeping tablet if possible. If I finish up with this, I could just say this. Good sleep is important for physical and mental health, but worrying excessively about sleep can of itself become part of the problem. Sometimes improving sleep is less about chasing perfect sleep and more about reducing the things that interfere with natural sleep.
Yeah. And on that lovely positive note, we let you go, Eamon. A few people were already asking if we can put this up as a podcast. We will. We'll get around to it tomorrow. I'd say it'll be by the time I get around to it, but we will put it up tomorrow. Eamon, thank you so much. Knowledgeable, as always.
I'll kiss you again.
We'll chat to you again next week. We'll take a break, folks. We're going to come back to the subject of the dangers of cycling. That's up next.